Greetings and welcome to another episode of Talking Black with your brother, Liam Kente. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate your support, and I appreciate, your attention. As I lay out these thoughts, I do want to apologize. Sometimes when I'm speaking, I'm not always speaking responsibly. I do have a responsibility. I believe all people have a responsibility to speak intelligently, because the details matter. The details and how information is passed from one person to the next, it matters. The presentation and the overall impact of the message matters. And I just want to apologize for the times, and you may not have a problem with it, but there's problems that I have picked up on in my own speaking that I want to address right now and say I apologize for that. This is not the type of apology that you hear somebody making because somebody forced them to apologize. You know, nobody forced me to apologize. I'm not apologizing to any white Jews or any gay people or anything like that. And I never will, because, you know, unless I say something that is extraordinarily out of character and irresponsible. But typically when we speak on those subjects, the evidence and the supporting the truth is in favor of the victims and not the alleged victims, the true victims, which is the Black community. The Black community is the true victims of the LGBT community. The Black community are the true victims of the Jewish community, and not the other way around. Although, strategically, they will say that they are the victims to, you know, paint themselves into an innocent picture. You know, play on our sympathies, play on our emotions, because what is a well-documented fact is that one of our biggest weaknesses as Black people, which is truly not a weakness, is truly the mercy of God. The general gratitude and good nature of Black people is considered to be a weakness by most all other races, particularly the white race. They see our humanity as a weakness. And it isn't. It's a mercy to them, because if we had no humanity, then we would have did to them what they did to us. But it's really not in our genetic constitution to be like them. We are not alike. And so, you won't hear me apologize for speaking that way. Just to clarify that I won't apologize for speaking in defense of the Black community against the agendas imposed on the Black community. This is a war that we're fighting. This is warfare. When you see Lil Nas X twerking on Satan, and Satan was a Black man, that was very key. You know, when you pay attention to the details of that video, they made the devil that he was twerking on a Black man as well. He was a more masculine Black man than Lil Nas X, but he was still a Black man. You could see the broadness of his nose. This is just showing you the level of attack and detachment that they are trying to pull on the youth. They're trying to pull the youth away from their Blackness, because the Blackness is our salvation. maintaining our composure, our blackness, maintaining our identity as black people is our safety net. It's our intelligence. The greater intelligence does not rest in the hands of the black person who conforms and yields to everything that white people say. They will intellectually rationalize why they do that. You'll have very intelligent black people who went to college talk about why I'm a Negro, or why I like white people, or why I just like white people because they have their people, and they've done some bad, but they're people with mistakes, and we all do mistakes, especially black people in the black community. You know, gotta be careful of these type of people that make apologies for white people, and they always do it on the side of saying that, you know, the black people do something bad as well. When they say that, those people are really saying that black people do all the bad. That all the bad that they experienced in their life, they feel as though it comes from black people. And it really wouldn't take much to expose that is their thinking. You start getting into their backgrounds, they feel more safe around whites as opposed to blacks. Because being around black people, the energy that black people emit is palpable, meaning that you can sense the presence of black people when you enter a room in a way that if your mind is alert, you can feel, you know, you can feel the effects of being around black people and how it pulls on your energy spiritually. So being around black people it can be exhausting. Because there's such a high energy output. There's so much laughter and there's so much, the communication level is so high. There's so much that you have to do. There's so many different things involved. There's so many politics involved, or so many mechanisms involved when communicating with black people on a certain high level. And those different levers, sometimes a person in their mind, is difficult for them to pull all those levers. You know, when you go and talk to white people don't usually implement manners into their conversations. They don't really care about stepping on the toes of other black people. Black people have a way of making jokes that are not heavy enough to really step on the toes, but they're light jokes, but they result in, you know, heavy laughter, you know. But white people have a way of talking where they are not mindful and not very considerate of the feelings of the other people that they talk to. They talk very carelessly and callously. So when they're around black people, there's this expectation to be improved. And a lot of black people really don't like that black people who come from a white background don't like that expectation. They don't like the expectation to be improved, to improve your energy. You want to be comfortable where your energy is. You don't want to feel that, you know, you are being pressured to refine your energy, because black people make you want to be better when you're around black people, particularly your family, particularly your grandma and aunties and your mother and your father and your uncles. They make you want to be better. They pull on your natural desire to be perfect. And that type of pressure can be very intimidating and just downright like just downright adversarial to some people. Some people just see that as reason enough to make black people their enemy just because they can't juggle the energy. You know, just because they can't be in the energy and be a part of it and see their place in it, they become the antithesis of that energy. They find that it's better to put themselves on the opposing side of that energy as opposed to becoming a part of the energy, because of becoming a part of black energy is a difficult task for those who is not familiar to. If that makes any sense. It's not really what I wanted to talk about though. I saw a few interesting things that I wanted to speak on. I was reading an article about Kim Kardashian being separated from Kanye West and how she feels like a loser. You know, some people were saying, you know, if anybody lost out, it was Kanye. And that's not true. No. Kanye is one of the most important, well, I won't say he's one of the most important people alive, but you know, I really can't say that. I want to say it because there's so many people who exist I won't say the shadows, but let's say we're not aware of their existence. There are people who we are not aware of who are vastly more important to the detriment of the planet than, you know, a pop star or even a president or a king. There are people who exist whose lives we depend on, but we don't know it. So I can't say that Kanye West is the most important person, one of the most important people alive, because there may be, you know, so many people ahead of him that it's not even worth saying he's one of the most. But he's certainly in the sphere of, or the realm of influence that we live in and live under. Kanye West is most definitely the pinnacle of pop culture. The pinnacle of pop culture is no longer held by a white person. And it really never was. The mantle of who is the king of creativity, who is the king of influence from an entertaining perspective. But you know, if you're being entertained, you're being influenced, and that's having an effect on your life in some way or some capacity. So the king of influence before was Michael Jackson. He was the king. You know, they wanted to say he was the king of pop. That's a lesser status of his rulership, his rule, Michael Jackson's rule, his reign, his kingdom was not limited to pop music. Even though that was the realm out of which he emerged, that was the method he used to reach his people. He wasn't just the king of pop music. He was the king of a multitude of different things. He was the king of performance. He was the king of humanitarianism. You see what I'm saying? So that was a void. When Michael Jackson died, there was a void. You know, who is at the pinnacle of influence? Who is the most influential person alive? Who is the person that everyone knows, whom someone has bought something from him? You've either bought a pair of Kanye's shoes, a pair of his clothes. You've either bought many of his CDs. You've heard his music. And if you haven't heard his music, you've heard the artist that he created. Kanye West created Kid Cudi. Kanye West created Big Sean. Kanye West created or revamped the career of Common. Kanye West revamped the career of Jay-Z. Kanye West recreated the sound of rap itself and hip-hop. So much so that he, not single-handedly, he didn't single-handedly elevate rap, but his hand is one of the prominent hands on pushing rap above rock and roll. So much so that rock artists and pop artists and electronic artists all stem some of their creativity from Kanye West. So when Kim Kardashian makes the statement that she feels like a loser, you know, it makes sense why she would. But when it, you know, I analyzed their relationship, and they were night and day, Kanye being day and her being night. Because he represented God. He wanted, everything about Kanye is God. You know, even, you know, people want to try to, well, you know, he likes to rap about his penis, and it doesn't matter. It matters in a, you know, in a detail, but the greater weight of support doesn't go to that. The greater weight of Kanye's contribution and his output and his energy goes to God and not to the devil. So Kanye always represented a lighter side of life, a more innocent side, and Kim Kardashian always represented a darker side, a more vulgar side, a more vain side, a more satanic side of life. You know? They were never made for each other. And she may feel like a loser, and she's getting old, but she did that to herself because she wanted to be a sex symbol. But her days of being a sex symbol is up. You know, Marilyn Monroe died as a young woman. These women are trying to model themselves after Marilyn Monroe, who was a woman who never got to experience what these women have to experience, which is the feeling of losing their beauty. Marilyn Monroe never had that feeling. I don't think that Marilyn Monroe was beautiful to the degree that women think she's beautiful. But, okay, she's, you know, a symbol of beauty. So she never got to the place where she was losing her looks due to her age. But the women who follow her guidance in her ideology of being a, you know, a proud slut, these women are undergoing those changes in their biology that are, that they base their whole lives around. That's incredible. You have to feel sorry for them to some extent for that. They've based their whole livelihood, their image, their everything is based on how they look. You know, you say, y'all was saying Kanye, he looks crazy. You know, he looks a mess. Yeah, but Kanye's beauty isn't in his physicality. Kanye's beauty is in his mind and in his hands. Kim Kardashian looks better than Kanye, but Kim Kardashian's beauty is not in her mind. Or who am I to say? Maybe, of course, Kanye saw something in her. You know, she's soft-spoken. But, you know, in terms of spiritual content, she's not competing with Kanye on any spiritual spectrum. So for her to feel like a loser, I understand that. I'm happy that they're separated. I'm not happy that she feels like a loser. But I'm happy that she lost a black man. I'm happy that she lost that. Not happy that she feels that way, but I'm happy that she lost a black man that she, you know, that she even admitted. Yeah, he deserves to be with a woman who supports his every move. In that statement, she was admitting that she is not a woman who supported all of Kanye's decisions. And, you know, you people would like to try to say that, well, all of his decisions weren't really rational. Yeah, but Kanye, whether they were rational or not, a woman should be supportive, especially when your ideas create billions of dollars. You think if Elon Musk starts talking about building, if Elon Musk said he wanted to build some, if he said that he wanted to, I don't know, be president, you think his wife is going to be like, oh no, that's a bad idea, why would you do that? No, she's going to support him. And she's going to believe in him. If, you know, that support system wasn't there because Kim Kardashian was a noticeably, very, very noticeably critical and judgmental of Kanye West. She wasn't with him because of anything other than the fact that he was Kanye West. But she also didn't like that he was Kanye West, because it was just too much of a challenge for her at every turn. Kanye West has a lot of emotional weight to him, and he has just as much intellectual weight as emotional weight. So she doesn't have the capacity to deal with him emotionally or intellectually. So what she ends up doing is just judging him as a strange person. He's weird. He's a weirdo. So she becomes more on the side of the people that hate him than the people who love him. Yeah, she doesn't deserve Kanye West. So if she feels like a loser, you know, I can understand that. And, you know, she'll get over it because she'll regret it for the rest of her life. And, you know, they weren't supposed to be together that long anyway. I suppose it was good for them to be long enough to have their children. But, you know, and God bless their children and look over their children, protect their children. And how they will be dealing with that separation, because a lot of problems in our lives start from the problems between our parents. Those children were already are already having a lot of problems, considering that they have a white mother and a black father, who are, again, day and night, where he's representing, where he's bringing all the creative, godly, scientific, and entrepreneurial aspects, and she's only facilitating the what to the children. That's, you know, had to speak to this white lady who lives in my building, and she has a black daughter. The baby's, it's a baby. She's not even a year old. She can't speak, but she treats the baby like an animal. She has a pet dog, and just to show you what I mean. She'll have the baby walk next to the stroller while the dog is inside the stroller. I'm not exaggerating or making up anything that I say. One, you know, it's an everyday occurrence. I hear her yelling at the baby. Come on, why are you not walking fast enough? Let's go. The baby is really only six or seven months old. When I peek my head out, this last time, I just got tired of it. So I peek my head out my door. I see her in front of my door yelling at the baby. The baby is all the way at the other end of the hallway crying with no shirt on, no pants, and no shoes, only a diaper. And she's a little girl. It's very irresponsible of black people to procreate with the enemy of their people. It's very, very, very irresponsible. And what it's going to do is, you know, people like me want to cuss you out. You know, I want to cuss out everybody involved except for the child. I want to cuss out the black person and I want to cuss out the white person. I said, is this what you're doing? You have your baby out here with no shoes on? What the hell is going on here? This is what I'm saying to the lady. She's just sitting up there smiling. Now, every time I walk by her, she puts her eyes down to the ground. But I still say hello to her child. It's very irresponsible to do that. You don't know what evil exists in these people that you're putting your seed inside of, or letting them put their seed inside of you. You don't know what evil exists inside of them and that will manifest itself onto your child. You know how you have problems with your family and you build up a relationship with your family. Let's say, you know, every time you see your brother, he punches you in the arm. Or every time you see your mom, you know, she gives you a kiss on the cheek. These people, these biracial children are building up relationships with white families that are injecting their racist mindsets that they can't control. White people can't control their racist minds because it's embedded into their very nature. So as they're interacting with these biracial black children, they are interjecting subtly to the child. To the child is subtle. And it would actually take the child to grow into some maturity to be able to recognize that it's not subtle, it's actually overt racism that their own family has been subjecting them to their entire lives. Oh, that's just grandma. She's just mean.
Get back inside the house. What the fuck? You're always...
Oh, that's just my grandma. She's always like that. And you don't know... And what you don't know is that if you were just a white girl, your grandmother wouldn't talk to you like that at all. But because your grandmother sees you as her enemy that she has to be family with, that has an effect on her psychology. And it's so irresponsible. It's so damn irresponsible. God bless the children. God bless the children. Yeah, so Kim Kardashian feels like a loser. Which is how Kanye West used to feel when he was with her. He felt like a loser. So, you know, sometimes it's good for another person to walk in your shoes. Absolutely. And as a man, I think it's better to leave a woman in that kind of position as opposed to her leaving you. Because that's really what all relationships are. It's just relationships today are just matters of who is going to beat who to the punch of leaving who. That's all it is. Who gets the last laugh? That's all relationships are nowadays. Who gets to hold their head up high and who has to go in the corner and cry? That's all relationships are. And more often than not, the man is the one who is fighting to keep it, who is not letting go so hard and so easily. And he's also holding on past its expiration date and therefore giving the kill shot to the woman. He wants the really what we do as men, we try to avoid the inevitable, which makes the woman become the executioner of the thing we did not want to do. She's now forced to divorce because you did not want to. You wanted to keep it alive. So now she has to destroy it. I think that some women may even do it reluctantly. I think most women might even do it reluctantly. You know? I want to segue from this conversation into something lighter, something that might make me feel a little bit more, like something not so deep and dark, but it's a lot going on in the world. It's difficult to stay away from conversations like this because most of what happens in the world today is serious, you know? I think that's why sitcoms are a outdated tool of entertainment. You know, they're trying to make black sitcoms. Black people can't be on sitcoms anymore. Life is just too real to express it in the form of, you know, making a joke and then expecting the audience to laugh. That type of TV is done. It's over. So Jamie Foxx's new sitcom is going to fail. Mike Epps's new sitcom is going to fail because that's not where it's at anymore. That's not where it's at. Most of these black shows that come out nowadays are going to, well, actually, that's not true. Because even as I'm saying that from a perspective of few, and I'm hoping that it'll be the perspective of most, but that's not always the case. But then again, naturally, the most catch on to what the few already know prior to going into it. Oh, they'll be like, oh yeah, that show turned out to be trash. And you could, I mean, like, you like, damn, I knew it was going to be trash before it came out. Just based off of the time that we live in, the context of the time isn't allowing for there to be a whole lot of comedic shows. The time is just too serious to have these type of shows, that type of content. We need more serious shows coming out. There's so many different things that are surrounding black people on all sides. Like, it's like being, you know, in the ocean surrounded by sharks. And then somebody says, let's make a TV show about how funny it is we're in the ocean surrounded by sharks. It just doesn't make sense. So those shows are going to fail. Yeah. God damn it. I'm just pure and negative. But it's that. Oh, man. I'm so negative. Oh, man. No, I can't think of anything I've seen in the news lately that's been worthy of anything. can't think of anything. I tried to talk about the V word. Not vagina. Not Voldemort. The other V word. And my podcast just shut down. They don't want you talking about the V word. But what I will tell the listeners is to pay attention to the mRNA inside of the V word. Because when they talk about the V word on the news now, they talk about it being technology. Now, that should strike you, that should strike all of us as being very strange for a V word to be associated with a T word like technology. What is technology doing in chemicals? If they're giving you a V word, then why is the word technology being implemented in the same sentence? And it is because they're using nanotechnology in these V words to genetically manipulate people. That's what mRNA does. It's the messenger RNA. The different genetic codings inside of the human body release information based off of messages that are sent to it and from it to the body to produce certain proteins and certain enzymes and chemicals in the body to make the body grow, to make the body function. So adding mRNA to the V word very, very hazardous. Hazardous is not the word. Disastrous. Disastrous. So stay away from the V word. Stay away from it. If you already took it, Godspeed. You wasn't supposed to, and you disobeyed. If you already took it, you disobeyed. Your better judgment. You have no right to trust the government because the government does not trust you. The government does not trust its citizens. That's why they're just now releasing information about so-called UFOs, because they did not trust their citizens with that type of information, because they did not want you to fear something greater than them. They want to be the sole entity that you fear. They did not want you to think that there was anything above them. But there is something above us. And the alien is not as alien as you think. The knowledge that it takes to create a flying saucer, or a wheel as we were taught to call it, is the knowledge of God. Meaning that the alien having supreme technology is because it is a supreme being on the wheel. You can't have supreme tech and not have a supreme being. So when you want to talk about the evidence of God, it's the UFO. I'm not saying, or I'm not positing, that God is a little green Martian. I am saying that God is a man. And that not like a man that you know. Because when you say God is a man, you start wanting to think about how much you hate your father, because he wasn't shit. Or how much you hate men in general, because they ain't shit. But God isn't a man like the men that we know. He's a different kind of man. And I hope I'm putting strong emphasis in that the inflection of my voice is carrying and resonating with you when I say different. When I say different, I mean different in every way you can think of, except for the biological way. But biologically, because of his supreme knowledge and wisdom and understanding, his brain does have an effect on his biology. So perhaps maybe he's even different biologically speaking. In fact, I would say 100% that he is different biologically speaking, but he still began biologically the same way as all human beings. But you should not trust your government. You weren't supposed to trust the government with your life. That was wrong. They did not earn that. The government did not earn your life. They didn't give you life. Think because you were born in a hospital that the government gave you life because they gave you a social security number. No. The government did not give you life. They gave you a social security number. Allah gave you life. We owe Allah. We owe him our lives. And that is the reason why I wanted to apologize to you all, because I don't want to be irresponsible with your ears. I don't want to be irresponsible with your ears any more than I have been. Because it's getting to a time where time is running out. And you know it. You know it. You're looking for answers. And inshallah, I might be the person to point you into the right direction. If you truly are looking for answers. If you are looking for answers to the problems of your life, and if you are looking for clarity on things that you have, that you want better knowledge on, email me. My email is akinte@gmail.com. Again, that's akinte. The letters A and K again @gmail.com. And I look forward to hearing from you. But until next time, folks, I'm going to say peace, and I hope that you all have a beautiful day and a beautiful rest of your lives. Welcome to another episode of Talking Black with your brother, host Aleem. I hope everybody's doing well. I'm doing well. You know, life is beautiful. Life can be summed up in so many different words, but you know, beautiful is the word that I choose to use today. But beautiful, that's a word that I use to sum up things sometimes when, you know, just for lack of a better word, beautiful isn't sometimes is a deceptive word. When I say life is beautiful, I mean life is complicatedly beautiful, meaning that the details of it are beautiful. I may not be entirely where I want to be right now, but I'm grateful that I have the ability, at least presently, to continue my journey towards that place. And that's beautiful. And I hope you all share my sentiments with that. I hope you all are having greater experiences than me. I was watching Kevin Samuels. Now, Kevin Samuels has been something like a savior to a lot of black men, because he's voicing unpopular opinions. He is taking up this mantle of an executioner. I mean, let's just call it how it is. You know, some people won't want to, you know, wrangle with words. I don't think if Kevin Samuels was being honest that he would argue with that word. He is very, very combative against the black woman. He sees a need for that. In my experience and in my inexperience, and from my experience, I'm going to speak on my experience. Because from my experience in observing women, from my experience of observing healthy relationships with women, from my observations of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, using those things as my guiding, you know, source, I have some issues with Kevin Samuels. But my inexperience won't allow me to condemn Kevin Samuels outright, because I, from my vantage point, I can see that there is a lot of good that is coming out of him. You know, I was happy to hear a man championing the rights of men. And then today, I was viewing his channel, and you know, I observe people not by just them, but by the people that follow them. And what they allow their followers to behave like. That's a piece of hardware that was put into my mind by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, where I not only judge the leader, I also judge the way in which he leads, and I judge the way in which he instructs his followers. And oftentimes when you get to certain brothers following, they do not have very strict disciplinarian tendencies with their following. And the more wild and animalistic their following is, or their chat rooms are, I tend to see that as a true depiction, a true reflection of their leadership, if that makes any sense. Like, for instance, Brother Polite. Brother Polite is not polite. Brother Polite, with all due respect, and a lot of the brothers from the Sineta group, they are highly researched brothers who are black men who are still scorned by the trappings of being black men in America. And they use intelligence not so much to build, but to destroy. From a spiritual perspective, these brothers are barbaric, in my opinion. A lot of them. I haven't heard from Brother Polite in a long time to really know where he is and his standings today. But a lot of people from the Sinetis circle, they are not gentlemen in talking to their brothers. They are very barbaric, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Belligerent in how they interact with brothers who share the same, who ideally share the same destiny and the same ideals as them, who share the same wants and needs as them. So then it becomes a argument of splitting hairs. And what you notice in their followings is that these people, they don't hold a lot of responsibility to their followings. I mean, you go into the comment section, you'll see all sorts of things that don't even really reflect the language that is being said by the leader, but the leader is invoking these types of word choices and these types of emotions out of their followers. So I was on Kevin Samuels' page and I was listening to him talk and I was looking over at the comment section. And when a woman got up on the stage that was not as, you know, pretty, the people in the comment section were calling her ugly. Wow, this woman is ugly, hideous, trash, this, that, third. Woo, I can't believe that somebody impregnated this thing. And what that has showed me is that as I started to listen to Kevin Samuels more, and I always heard it, you know, I think that he's very intelligent, but I believe the primary fault with Kevin Samuels is his lack of spirituality. His lack of spirituality and his lack of commitment to black people. Because... And to verify, I mean, these, you know, sometimes when I go into something, I have to wait until the end. But then other times I can already make, you know, assertions ahead of time and then be validated by have my assertions validated by something that this person will say. And that is exactly what happened. I was watching the video, listening to Kevin Samuels, listening to him, listening not just to his words, but listening to his spirit to get a kind of an assessment of what he is on that level. And I heard a white man there. I heard a scorned man. I heard a bitter man, a man who will wrangle with women to try and see things from a man's point of view, and he doesn't do it in a very respectful way either. He does it in a very dismissive way. I mean, before the sisters even come on the show, he's already has his head turned away, looking at his computer like, you know, like I could be doing anything else but this. You know, this is all a blessing. And truly, I get what the brother is saying. You know, but if you call yourself, you either are a, there are no middle grounds anymore. People always try to go for the middle ground. The middle ground has been blown up. The gray area has been blown up because war has decimated land to there only being two sides. There is no gray area. You either are a teacher or you are a creature or you're a combatant. When you were in school, when I was in school, we had teachers who were genuine teachers. Then we had other people who said entitled that they were teachers, who wanted you to think that they were teachers, who wanted to say that they were teachers. Because, you know, nobody wants to come out and say they hate kids. Just like nobody wants to come out and say they hate women. Nobody wants to come out and say that it's a chore to deal with children. So you fight children. Send them out the classroom. Argue with them. But then you want to call yourself, well, I'm only doing this because I love you. No, you know, love, and Kevin Samuels is not factoring in love when he's talking to these black women. And that is, again, speaking to his spiritual nature. He's very business oriented. And to be business oriented as a primary position is to be a white man in your essence, because only person on the planet who is business first, who is all business before, without mixing in the proper compassion and the proper generosity, is the white man. Certainly the black woman, what he reveals from the black woman is the black woman's her disillusion from white men. All black, but see, that's the thing about Kevin Samuels. He's a black man, but he's not fighting white supremacy. And I said that these are one of the assertions that I made. You know, a lot, but you know, I try to stay away from doing that because a lot of people try to do that. Oh yeah, I had this idea, but then somebody said it, and then, you know, like, I was right all along. Like, a lot of the time when brothers and sisters say that, it's not really true. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's them just, you know. When I say that, I'm being genuine. I'm being real. I'm really sharing the inner sanctum of my thoughts when I say that. I genuinely, legitimately, truthfully, honestly, have pre-existing ideas, just like most people. And then I have them affirmed by things that people say. And I'm not special in that. I've had some crazy encounters where I've done that. I've had times where I've said whole sentences, and then 2 seconds later, somebody on TV said the exact same thing. I've had moments like that that make me think that I might be a little special in my ability to see into the heart of a matter, but maybe I'm not. Well, who knows? But in any case, Kevin Samuels is not speaking on the behalf of black people, and he's not speaking for black people. Kevin Samuels is speaking for himself, and Kevin Samuels is a brand. Kevin Samuels is a entity that operates in a white supremacist world, but does it with a black flair to it. But it's a lot of but he traverses in a white space, corporate America. And doing that has left Kevin Samuels, I believe it has left him dispirited and very weary from battle. You know, he's a very well-groomed man. He looks very clean, beautiful. He has feminine characteristics that are very hard to ignore. You know, being, he's a hard-working man, obviously, but it's very difficult to ignore that there's a man arguing with a woman, because that's a very feminine thing to do. It's very feminine to argue with women. You know, we do it as men. We argue with women to try and get them to see certain things. And Kevin Samuels argues with women to try to get them to see certain things. And then, you know, what I strongly dislike about Kevin Samuels, and he's my brother and I love him very dearly, but what I strongly dislike about this brother is the roughness in which he handles women, and it's so careless. Like, even the sisters who are generally interested in, I mean, he had a gorgeous sister who was on his show. She was basically, she wanted to come out and, you know, and say, you know, it was man's fault, this, that, and the third. But when she conceded, you know, he got her away from that. But Kevin Samuels is no respecter of persons. So he wants you to concede to him. And then there should be some sense of reward in conceding to a person, especially if you're a woman. If you get a woman to agree with you, and you bring a woman, you know, in, you know, symbolically to her knees, and she yields over to you, that's a time to show mercy. But Kevin Samuels' spirit is so battle oriented. It's so warrior like, and when I mean warrior like, I mean bloody. It's so, he has such a bloody approach to dealing with humans that, you know, he looks at a person kneeling in front of him as an opportunity to chop their head off. It was a sister on here who was very gorgeous. She said, yeah, I'm a single mother, so what? I should be single for the rest of my life? He said, you should have made the right decision from the beginning. Okay, I mean, obviously. But then she asked him, well, what should I do? He said, man, I'm not here, dude. You don't pay me to teach you. And look, so then that made me very ickish. I'm like, you know, so the criticism is free, but the right guidance is it costs. So the criticism, the critique is free. The calling the woman unattractive, that's free. You get that free of charge. The bringing a woman to terms with her reality and her situation in the most brutal of ways. Nobody can deny that brother is very brutally, I can't say honest, because in some points he's very honest because it's in alignment with the truth. But in other points, this is just Kevin Samuels' relationships perspective. I heard him say to one girl, you know, no man wants to adopt a child. That's not true. I want to adopt children. As a man, I don't feel like I'm entirely alone in that. There may not be many men who are in the spirit of adopting children. You know, he always relates things to the animal world. Well, if this was the animal kingdom, but the thing about being a human being is that you are giving the thought processes to think above your natural dispensation, your natural reaction. Unlike an animal, you can rise above that and think and build on a higher level to make good of those situations that happen like that. You know, there are black children who need homes. And there's so many things, so many problems that with Kevin Samuels. The main problem is that he's just not for black people. He's not fighting white supremacy. See, if Kevin Samuels' aim and director was fighting white supremacy, then that would change the spiritual element that is missing from his curriculum. But it doesn't, because he's not fighting white supremacy. He's fighting women. He's fighting women. But he's not fighting white supremacy. And to prove that point, he had a white guest on his show. Why are you talking to a white woman? Well, I can offer a white woman the same advice as I could offer a black woman. Yeah, you could. I mean, to your own fault, because the white woman generally already knows what you're saying. You know, white people come from a pretty, I mean, it's not a righteous culture, but it's a culture that has its foundation in proper relationship guidance and things like that. I'm not saying white people have perfect relationships by any stretch of any imagination, but what I'm saying is that their culture advises them to have, you know, to be seen doing the right thing. Not that they don't do the wrong thing once the door is closed, once the wedding is over. Not that they don't do the wrong thing. Not that there is an unimaginable, horrific element behind white doors. Because there is. But they are instructed to be seen doing the right thing. So basically what he's telling her, from what he learned from white men himself, she already knows. So, you know, and more so than that, her intentions for coming on the show, you know, could be duplicitous. She may be coming on the show just to advertise that black men should be with white women. She may have came on the show to advertise the fragility of white women, the innocent quality of white women, quote unquote, wink, wink, as opposed to the more warrior-like, aggressive, outspoken, loud, not nature of the black woman, but the current situation that black women are in. That white woman could have been there to stunt on black women, to try and, you know, bring some, you know, options to the table. But other than that, Kevin Samuels, you know, he's not against abortion. You're a black man, but you're not against abortion. Being pro-life is a very black oriented thing, because God is pro-life. But when you are a black man and you think that the woman has a right to kill her child, kill the child, not her child, pardon me, because that's really a problem. The child is in her, but it does not belong to her. That's her prop. That's her rationale and bad thinking. And if all of our mothers were cursed with that type of thinking, then all of us would probably be in very precarious situations, or we would not be in existence to begin with. Because to look at something that's inside of you as your own to do what you will with is to put that child in a lot of jeopardy and to kill that child's life ultimately. But if you see the child as something that's from God, again, the spiritual element. Because people, a person like Kevin Samuels might want to rationalize spiritual elements away. Don't need it. Don't need that spiritual shit. That shit gets in the way of practicality and logistics and pragmaticism. But it's the proper way for human beings to communicate with other human beings, what Kevin Samuels has advocated himself. To be a human being is to be a servant of others. He hasn't said this. This is me saying this. And to be actively involved with others. And most of those actions come with a service or with generosity. This is the world as it should be, as it will be, not as it currently is. This is the world. And how do you know that that's how the world should be? Because that's what everybody wants for themselves. The best religion is wanting for others what you want for yourself. Everybody wants sincere kindness. Everybody wants to be treated with the best. Everybody wants to be smiled at. Everybody wants to have a warm embrace. So when people are not doing these things, they are creating going against their own real desires. You aren't being embracing. You aren't being loving, but you want it. See, Kevin Samuels. Yeah, nah. I had enough of the brother. Yeah, I saw enough. He had a sister on here. She was very, you know, he handled her. He did not handle his sister with care. You know, and the reason why, there's many reasons why, primarily the reason why is because Kevin Samuels has a strong feminine spirit himself. That's very evident in the language that he used. I'm not going to call him a homosexual. It can be speculated all day. If I heard news that he was a homosexual, I wouldn't be shocked. But I don't believe that black men are naturally homosexuals. You know, people who say that they believe that homosexuality is some natural occurrence. I know for a fact that all homosexuality is from the influence of white Europeans. So all homosexuality under a black face is simply black inferiority and white supremacy. Because that's what a homosexual is. He is an inferior man. Inferior in his manhood by his own estimation first. Not because other people like myself told him you're inferior, but because he estimated his own connection to manhood and found it faulting and did not have the proper support by his mother, by his teachers, by his friends to give him an elevation or a footstool to push himself out of that lack of masculine motivation. So he fell into his X chromosome, which is the female side of things. Instead of going higher into the Y, into the thing that makes him different than a woman, he fell into the thing. You know, the man has an X and Y chromosome. The female has two X's. So when people say that the woman has her value from birth, the women are born with their value. Women are born with their worth. A man has to work to be with a woman. A woman does not have to work to be with a man. A woman simply has to be. And there will be a man soon thereafter, because that is just the nature of how this universe works. It's a double standard, but it's not one that I'm arguing with. I'm not mad at that fact. You know, Allah gives mercy to every creature he creates in different ways. Men have the mercy of not having to undergo birth. But women have the mercy of so many other things to make up, I believe, for that fact. Childbirth, I believe, gives the woman divine mercy. Where life, you know, can be harder for the woman, certainly speaking, in certain circumstances. But a lot of the hardships that men go through in life, they don't always befall the woman. The woman is protected divinely, unless she just is very, very irresponsible with that protection, and she just does things haphazardly. You know, but God gives mercy to all of his creatures in different ways. We don't have the same mercy. We're not shown the same mercy. We're not shown the same ease or the same benefits. So, you know, listening to this brother, man, he raises a lot of good points. I mean, the woman is modern. She's feminist. She's completely whitewashed. Even the hood chick is whitewashed, because the hood, the ghetto, is a construction that was created by white people. And black people really tend to forget that in their analysis of where they come from. They think that because they come from the hood that they have no, that they are not touched by white people. But white people control the hood remotely, remote control of the hood. You think because, well, there was no white people around. So, you know, but there was the police and there was the teachers in the school. and they were shaping your mind, and they were shaping the parameters of how far you can go, and they were giving you authority. And you always felt the presence of the white man, even though he didn't and she didn't live with you. And the buildings that you lived in, they were all built by white people. So the people in the hood are under this illusion that they are the owners of the hood. It's just as crazy as a slave master moving off the plantation. And then the Negroes and the slaves say, oh, shit, we own this plantation now. But the owner is a white man. He's just, you know, in a few acres over, sipping iced tea with his binoculars, just, you know, looking at the Negroes on the land and even watching them play around in his home, and watching them with, you know, with kind of like this smirk on his face, like these people really think they running my house. And this makes, you know, white people are very, you know, when you know, we really don't understand the mind of white men and how they like to exemplify their power and what they're able to do. White men find very evil ways to exemplify what they can do. I'm going to send somebody over there to show these Negroes. I mean, I enjoy seeing them act this way. I enjoy seeing them act. White people like seeing black people act, because the acting is a lie intrinsically. You know, you're acting like you're a boss. White people like that. He's acting like he's a CEO. Every time you see a black person and they start a business, I'm the CEO. You don't have to, you know, assign these lofty titles to yourself. All we have to do is do the work. And the, you know, there's no real glory in titles. There's glory in work. But every black person wants to be the CEO. White people love to see that. Oh, he thinks he's a CEO, does he? So... Yeah, Kevin Samuels, he's not, you know, the biggest flaw with that brother is that he's not fighting white supremacy. He's actually advocating it. When you talk about abortion, when you talk to the black woman in that type of tone and manner, and then your comment section doesn't have the same eloquence that you may have, and to be quite honest, I've heard many more eloquent speakers than Kevin Samuels, but his audience is infatuated with his eloquence because he states his opinions and his facts very thoughtfully, and they are infatuated with it and they love it because they do not possess the same level of eloquence that he has. But he does not possess the same level of eloquence that I've come to respect and to honor. So his level of eloquence has a whole gulf, has a subdivision of people underneath of him. Anybody who does not have more understanding than him and more knowledge than him is under him. And how he treats the people under him is deplorable. His following is disgusting. You know, he teaches them very bad manners. And they're not light, and they're not, you know, generous, and they're not polite at all with these women that come up on here. I mean, his comment section is savage. And I don't know why, as a man who dresses up in a suit, because the suit is a facade. And Kevin Samuels is a savage, in my opinion. He's a ravished brother who's been ravaged by white supremacy primarily. And he's been ravaged by his relationships with women, his mother and other women, like all of us. But, if a man can be, you know, broken up and built back up again and hurt by the world. But, you know, you don't have to demonstrate your hurt and your pain so evidently in how you deal with other people, you know. And if you are a man of class, then you should demand class of your followers. And I don't see that in his followers. And if he doesn't see that he is creating a space for people to be savages, then Kevin Samuels is not as efficient as he thinks he is. He may be giving brothers, you know, a license that they really don't need. I believe that the black woman is an impressionable creature. That environment, that the black woman is truly a reflection of her environment. The black man is someone who goes to war with his environment. The black man tries to push the boundaries of his environment. The black man wants to change his environment. He wants to be above his environment. He wants to master his environment. The black woman, by the nature in which she was created in, she cannot help but be a product of her environment. That is why it is really best that the black woman be in a black environment, not a nigga environment. Not to be confused with a hood ghetto environment, because again, like I said, the hood and the ghetto are just places that were created by white people for black people to go insane. The hood is an insane asylum without any walls to it. It is a place where people are free to lose their minds, and it is all by design. It is not by accident. It is not happenstance. It is not because it is the natural tendencies of black men. As white supremacists try to postulate in very sudden and subtle statements that the black man is naturally a bad boy. He's naturally a bad at school. He's naturally prone to violence, and naturally he wants to be a criminal. That black people, and the black woman is naturally a whore. When white people parade around, you know, this is to show you the enemy. See, people think that because Cardi B is allowed on talk shows with white people who are so-called distinguished white people, they are not. They are degenerates who hide behind the facade of being distinguished and honorable. But to show you how degenerate like they are, they invite black women who are rappers. They invite black men who are rappers on this show, really with the secret agenda of mocking and belittling them to their face. But in a way that makes it look like they're giving praise to this performer or entertainer. Oh, Cardi B, we love that you're on our show. And she's just sitting up there just as ignorant and confused as the day is long. But she doesn't know that they're really making fun of her. And they're really broadcasting her image as a way to show the world, see, this is what these niggas are. And we should accept them as how they are. This is what they're trying to say. This is what they mean when they say we should accept people as they are. It's not that they should be saying we should challenge people to be better than what they are. That's not the white man's agenda. The white man's agenda was to take humanity and reduce it to a subhuman level, to be the master of that level. To put himself above that level. He takes the human down to a subhuman level. Then he takes himself and puts himself a level above that level so that he can say he is the master of his level and the level underneath him. All to say he's not to say that he's challenging them to be better or to be on his level, but to say that I accept you at your level. really what the white man is saying is the only way that he can accept black people is if they are underneath him. That's really, 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 really at the core of it. Because you can't take a black man like Minister Farrakhan. White people hate Minister Farrakhan by default. They hate him. They detest him. They see him as a problem. And if he is a black man who loves black people, then what the hell do you think that they think about you? Well, they accept me. Yeah. They accept you as you are. And they made you the way that you are. And if you became a little bit different than what you are, they would not accept you anymore. And that's the problem. A lot of people are conflicted with being accepted by their enemies because their enemies hold power and sway. That's a feminist mindset. Because again, like I said, the man's mindset is to go to war with his environment, to chop down the trees, to kill the beasts that are in the forest that will impede on his living conditions. When they were building civilizations in Africa, they went into the jungle to kill the lions that in that surrounding area, because doing so was what they had to do in order to protect their families. They can't be two alpha predators living in the same space at the same time. It's a conflict of interest. And for those of you who are, you know, I'm not speaking about the destruction of white people. White people, what I'm saying is that it's not about destroying white people. It's about destroying white supremacy. White people are going to die on their own if they don't get help. If they don't turn to the master teacher that was put in front of them to learn from. The arrogance of white supremacy is they keep wanting to elect their leaders. But white people are not dignified enough to be their own leaders. But arrogantly, they think that their leaders are better than our leader. So they just keep following their own tails, like a dog spinning around in circles. And black people can follow that dog if they want to. And that dog is going to die from exhaustion, from so many different things are going against the life of that dog, that white dog. So many different elements are against the white man. He's going to die on his own. He's going to die on his own. We may live to see there be a war between the heavens and the earth, where these so-called UFOs, what we know to be wills, come down and rain terror on white people and the black people that are closely associated with them and living in close proximity with them. You know, that's why I live in a very small white town. I'm trying to leave this town as fast as I can and get to a major black city, because Allah has mercy in the ghettos, because the ghettos are places of madness, but the ghettos are places of divine protection as well, because Allah sees the life in the ghetto. He sees the babies. He sees the beauty of black people, regardless of who else doesn't see it. And see, that's what you should see. Nobody cares about black people. If you accept a black person as they are, then that doesn't show that you care about them or that you love them. That just shows that you accept them. And you're trying, and you accept them because you know in your mind that you are in a better position than them. And you accept them because it's just like, something. This is like a man accepting that another man is not as strong as him. And it gives you great pleasure to see another man not as strong as you. But it doesn't do anything for that man. You say, well, I accept that you're not as strong as me. And the man, he doesn't really know what you're saying. He thinks that you're being kind. He's being kind to me. He's a kind white person. He's kind. He accepts me for who I am. Yeah, but he made you who you were so that he could accept you. Because when you were strong, intelligent, dutiful, family-oriented, warrior mindset, God. Because, you know, those black men in Africa, they are brilliant, ineffective as hell. They radiate masculinity, every single one of them. They radiate it. Even a man who's skin and bones, who haven't eaten any food, when you listen to him talk and him speak on his situation, you still are meeting, encountering a very masculine figure. Famine and destruction of his livelihood hasn't diminished his manhood to the point where you can't recognize it. You still see the manhood in the African man, even if he's the big, broad, thick African man who looks like he'll kill a hippo, or the frail, skinny African man who looks like he'll kill a hippo. Yeah, they couldn't accept that. Can't accept that. That man has to be killed. That man has to be changed. What they say? What did Suge Knight say in the movie? Don't make me change you. That was a very very weird line. Very, very haunting line. It was a very strong line. When he was talking to Eazy-E, I think he said, "Don't make me change you." And it was like it's a line that raises a lot of eyebrows because it can mean so many things. But that's exactly, so many things is exactly what happened to black people as a result of white supremacy. So no, we have to fight white supremacy at any cost. And Kevin Samuels is not fighting white supremacy. Kevin Samuels is fighting what he is fighting, an individualistic battle against his own people, which, to the delight of white supremacy, to the delight of white supremacy. On one hand, the brother's talking about women being hoes, and on another hand, he's advocating if a woman doesn't put out on a date that she's stuck up, that she needs to put out. It seems like Kevin Samuels is just trying to be man's best friend. Like he's just trying to be the guy who is using his platform and his influence to make men have an easier time with women. I don't believe men need to have an easier time with women. I don't believe that. I believe that if there are hard conditions with a woman, that they are naturally there because, again, the woman is a reflection of her environment. And if she is hard as the ground outside, you still have to plant a seed there because it's the only ground that you have. It's the only ground that we have. You know, you can try going around or trying to find the purest content of all kinds of grounds. You waste a lot of ground and a lot of time, lose a lot of ground and lose a lot of time trying to find the perfect ground, the perfect field. You know, you can get a black woman. Any black woman will do. All of them are valuable. All of them are wonderful, wonderfully created. You just have to be like a cloud, you know. But if you are like the ground yourself, you don't, you know, the ground needs moisture and the ground needs stimulation from the rain. So men need to aspire to be like clouds. Men need to aspire to be on that type of level where the ground can respect that level. We keep trying to bring the ground up or bring the sky down. Well, we could stay in our respective places. You know, I don't need the ground to be in the sky. I don't need the sky to be on the ground. I don't need the woman to act like a man. I don't need the woman to be perfect for the man, because she already is perfectly made. If she's any more perfect, then she will definitely outdo the man. You know, if a woman has more class than Kevin Samuels, she's outdoing him. He can talk all of that stuff to a woman who doesn't know a man, doesn't know what men are, doesn't know anything about herself. He could talk that to her and she'll listen. She won't like it because naturally she won't agree with it, but he can talk that to her and she'll be forced to listen to him. But a woman who does understand culture, she's not going to put up with Kevin Samuels. She'll tear Kevin Samuels apart because he's inconsistent in his messaging. Like a white man. On one hand, he's saying, yeah, black woman, you need to be more honorable, more respectful, more this, more that. And then the other hand, I heard him tell a woman, yeah, if a man's asking you for sex on the first date, who are you to deny him sex? Because you already had a child, you already are not a virgin, you might as well keep on not being a virgin. That's not, no sir. If a woman wants to have an abortion, no sir. No sir, Kevin Samuels. Nah, I won't be listening to brother anymore. I won't be listening to brother anymore. No, it's not. That's not what women need to hear. That's not bringing black men and black women together. It's not. That's not it. Women need to be made aware of their responsibilities and duties to a relationship, period. Women don't need to be made to feel inferior, brother, because they do not have ostentatious or aesthetic beauty to your standards. That's not right. No, sir, that's not right. You know, when the woman said, he said, what do you bring to the table? The woman said, I bring my heart to the table. That was a powerful answer, because even when she said it, I felt it. She was gorgeous. Her skin was glowing. And I know the right man would take that and he's going to have his heaven on earth. The right man will take that woman and have a very good time with her. Not a good time in the sense of abusing her beauty and abusing her life and her life force, but I'm saying he's going to have an enjoyable time on earth being with that woman if she meets the right one. But she said, I give him my heart, I give him my personality, I give him the thing that makes me unique. Kevin Samuels said, that ain't shit. I said, damn, this brother is wicked. This brother is devilish. This brother is a white devil in black skin. You gonna tell a black woman that her heart ain't shit? No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. Uh-uh. No, sir. Unacceptable. Kevin Samuels, that was unacceptable. And the only people who are going for it are the niggas and the Negroes who never had any contact with real culture to know that what you're saying is wrong, and you are deriving your sense of culture from the white culture, business culture that you were immersed in for your entire life. You, sir, are not even totally familiar with real black culture, or else you would never speak that way. You are getting a lot of your patterns and behaviors from white men, Tell a black woman that her heart ain't shit. Her heart is everything, brother. It's everything. Yeah, we like the woman's vagina. He gonna tell the black woman, why does a man wanna be with me? He said for your looks and for your body. Damn, black man. No, it's for your mind and your body. And your mind is in touch with your heart. When people talk about their mind, they're talking about their heart. Your heart and your mind are mixed together. They're the same thing. I used to think they were interchangeable with each other. I don't know why. It's the same thing. Your heart and your mind. Your mind just is basically just interpreting your heart. I mean, they're the same thing. One is, it's the same thing. You feel with your thoughts, you think with your feelings. It's the same thing. So, no, sir, that was emphatically incorrect. And shame on you for saying that to that sister, because that is not any service. That's not doing any service to any man. That is doing a disservice to the family. And it is, but it is definitely making the white man very, very happy. And I hate to make white men happy. I hate to make the white man smile, unless it's genuinely something that needs to be smiled about, that could be smiled at by everybody. But I hate to see the white man smile at the fact that black people are at war with our own selves, as opposed to being at war with him. The white man can't smile when he has to fight. That's why we don't smile. We take a picture, we not smiling. It's hard for black men to smile because we are at war and we know it. When the white man, every time you see him, he's smiling his ass off. He does not feel the war is too, it's not on his side. He's beating us too good and delighted in it. Is fueling his sense of masculinity. It's fueling his sense of vitality, fighting the black man and winning. If you fought God and won, wouldn't you feel good? And we gotta feel just as good at defeating Satan. So with that, I'm gonna say peace before my phone dies. Thank you for listening. Peace.